Hi, I'm Brian Kramer, author of Human to Human and host of Lead Tell TV. Please welcome Daniel Glickman. Daniel wants to help us all grow. Daniel is also the host of BTU, a podcast exploring a new way of thinking about marketing from the business to the user and from marketing teams of all sizes. Just like us, he also loves talking about B2B marketing. From accelerating growth in companies to building a brand from the ground up, Daniel has seen it all, and he's done it on several continents to boot. Join me as I hear from Daniel over what he thinks are the keys to growing the brand and business from the chair of the marketing department and how you can do it too. Here's Daniel. Daniel, welcome to Lead Tell TV. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to this conversation.
Well, you have a vast experience in so many things. The topics are ranging. As a CMO, you've done incredible things. You've written books. You're a speaker. You're a CMO. You look at marketing in a different way. I know we've spent some time at a conference actually together physically back when that actually was a thing. And we talked about all kinds of things there as well. And one of the things that I'm fascinated by is just your background in video and live video and everything that happens there. And I'm curious, across everything that you have done, the two books, the podcast, the blog, the series of international meetups and all that stuff as a senior marketer, what's the common thread that runs through all of those things for you? Is that video or is it something else?
Oh, wow. I'm a SaaS marketer, right? And my focus is on the prosumer industry or the prosumer customer. So that tends to be different than B2B and tends to be different than B2C, or definitely B2G. E-commerce is another separate thing altogether. And over the years, I've really honed in on that and discovered that that's a thing of its own with its own methodology. A lot of us kind of take those that we deal with the prosumer, we take it for granted, but it's really, really different than the classic B2B and so on. So a lot of my, I guess that's the common thread. That's the world I live in. And that's where I'm most comfortable in. I could keep going. I could keep talking about other stuff, but I'll let you follow up on that.
Yeah, well, I am curious more about that. When you talk about how that all works in your world, how do you approach things as a CMO? What is your first approach when you take on something?
Ah, great. That's a great question, because I'm now between jobs and I'm thinking of a job I'm probably going to be jumping right into in a very short while. And I'm thinking exactly this question, what do I do with this company and this brand that I'm going to leap right into? How do I take this forward? And the first thing that I always start with is, the competition is vast. No matter what industry you're in, you've got competitors that are enormous, right? No matter what you do, you're probably competing against Google or Adobe or Amazon or one of these big ones, right? Microsoft. And if you aren't yet, you're going to be soon. So how do you compete against these? And the answer is you have only one thing that they don't, right? Because they have more talent, they have more money, they have more experience, they have more resources, they have more brand, they've got more everything, right? The one thing that you have that they don't is something that you actually don't have, which is a legal department. You don't have this huge organization that kind of stifles innovation and strives for stability and a reduction of risk. So the one thing you are able to do is actually take on risk, be more agile, and try doing things that are a bit more innovative and outside the box, right? So many times when we think outside the box or innovation or disruption, we think big ideas, but I'm all about the little ideas, the little disruptions, right? What can we do? Because the big ones you need a lot of money for, and let's be honest, how many times a year can we do a big disruption? How many times in our lifetime can we succeed in a big disruption? Very few. So, what about the little disruptions? Everything we do, I try to do a bit differently. And one of the things I always talk about with my team, always, and it's always a battle, but I insist on it every single time. Never look at the competition, right? I mean, every now and then you want to take a look, see, okay, what are their price points? What is their positioning? Kind of how do we compare to it? And then move on, forget about it. And it's every time, every company I've worked with, the CEO will jump in at me and say, hey, did you see this email from the competition? They're doing it. Why aren't we doing exactly the same thing? And I'm like, I don't want to do exactly the same thing. I want to be something completely different, because all of these competitors, they're all copying from each other. They're all converging on the exact same positioning and the exact same space in the market. They will all be exactly the same. And what's the only differentiator? Price. So the question that comes into my mind when I'm starting is, how can we differentiate? What best practices from outside of the industry can we bring into this industry that'll be different and interesting, right? Because we can't invent everything. How can we be original and different, take the company in a different way? How do we go away from the competitors and in the direction that'll give us a higher profit margin, right? And that's the key. So it's easy to be different, or it's not easy, but you can be different. It's tougher to be different and make more money doing so, right? So that's where I start from. And that's the foundation. From there, it's all about talent. It's about recruiting the right talent, managing, motivating them, monitoring and providing them with the right resources. That's it. That's all it takes.
I love how easy you make it sound, like as if it's just flowing water and it works out the way that it works out. And I know that there's so much that goes into that, and there's a lot that we could play with there. One of the other things that I also am curious about is what your own brand is all about, because you've gone through a transformation over the years and created a lot of stuff that went into what you just said is a part of who you are. Where does that come from, and what's your brand about?
Interesting. Yeah. So my brand today is about, you know, SaaS marketer that's got some creativity, definitely in the video space, at least today, right? On the creative media space. And that's what I live in. I do marketing, I do SaaS. So that's what I share with the community. That's the kind of stuff I'm interested in talking to people about, maybe consulting about, you know, these kind of things. So that's my brand. And it lives alongside whatever my employer is, right? So these days I'm kind of in the video, online video space. 10 years from now, I don't know what it'll be, but that's where my brand kind of lives alongside that employer. Because my personal brand, it's got one sole purpose. It's to increase my value to the employer I have. If I can bring in influencers and relationships with influencers in the field, if I have influence over prospects that they would buy partly because Daniel said so, or they heard Daniel talk about the product or whatever, right? That increases my value to my employer, increases my salary, you know, makes me more desirable, makes me more important to the company and less replaceable. So that's why I have a brand. So my brand varies based on my employer, based on all these things. And these days I'm into video, so I'm more and more on video.
I love that you brought up influencer, because that's a place where my own business or past business has been focused, and it's a huge space. Is that how you are seeing brands driving more growth, or is there other areas?
Definitely multiple areas. So, you know, where growth comes from varies over time. It varies over company in the competitive landscape, et cetera, right? So if your competitors, for instance, just raised $300 million and they're paying all of the influencers in the industry way more than you could ever, right? That's not going to be your core driver of growth, right? You better look for another core. There's one channel that does really well for most companies. That like one channel that drives most of the growth, right? That could be influencer, it could be social, it could be SEO, it could be ads, right? These are kind of the more classic ones you're talking about today, right? Social media is more of a like an amalgamation of these, not really its own channel, if you will. It used to be, you know, that you could just be viral and social or whatever, but nowadays it's not really a driver. It kind of works in tandem with others. Influencer marketing is an essential piece of the marketing puzzle for every business nowadays, even if it's not the main core, because with the influencer marketing, without influencer marketing, you don't have social media. Without influencer marketing, you don't have presence in trade shows. Particularly if you're on B2B, influencer marketing is huge, right? Because, you know, I think of Gartner and, you know, even G2 or Capterra nowadays, is that influencer marketing or is that social marketing? What exactly is that, right? But it's kind of, it's something in this realm of influencer, social, word of mouth, all of that together, right? And when you're looking at the buyer's journey, once a prospect is in the buyer's journey, they are looking for third-party validation, right? That can come from a bunch of different resources, but in B2B, it's even more important. Now, the prosumer industry, which I'm in, is kind of, it's technically a B2B, right? These are businesses that are buying, but they pull out the credit card and just buy in an impulse buy. They don't have a committee and they don't have a process that goes through and they don't need to talk to a salesperson. So you still have these elements in there where you need that, you know, not just people like me recommend the product, but you also want, you know, somebody up there telling me, you know, they're the pro, they're the expert. They're telling me, listen, I certified it. This is good. And it works. Right. So it's hard not to have an influencer marketing program in your business.
Fantastic. That's music to my ears, both as an influencer and somebody that loves to stand behind a product that you truly believe in. And that's, you know, creates some magic, especially for an influencer's audience, and you believe so highly in this, and now you get a chance to actually partner and work with the brand and deliver something unique to your audience. So I can't think of a better magical formula than that to be able to create, you know, more realistic relationships, and especially from somebody that you trust and know and love, and that's so different than an ad on Facebook. And I'm also curious too about the other medium of video that you've been talking about. You've also produced your own podcast. So obviously you bought into the idea that the content is moving away from traditional blog and maybe social feeds a little bit in that model, and it's moving more towards podcasting and video. So where do you think podcasts and video can meaningfully be used in marketing?
Yeah. Okay. So each of these are distinct. Podcasts are a fascinating medium. Podcasts for us marketers are really strange, hard to swallow, because we're used to dealing with large numbers, right? 100,000 visitors a month to our site, 10 million visitors a month, right? Whatever, you know, X number of leads and so on. And then we talk about a podcast. And when you look at what is a successful podcast in the business sphere, if you've got 1,000 listeners, that's a lot, right? I think the median size of a podcast is, I might be completely off here, but it's in the hundreds. I think it's 500 or 200 or some number like that, right? So what's the point of having a podcast and putting all this effort into this medium, which only brings you, a very small audience? And the answer is, it's a very, very high influence medium. People who listen, spend an hour with you talking, right? Listening to you. There are people who you're getting in their brain. You really have something that sticks with them versus, you know, they just see an ad, a 5 second something, and they keep swiping, right? So that's how to think about it. So the key is, where does this kind of medium fit in the buyer's journey? And it's usually a bit lower down, deeper down in the journey, right? Towards down in the funnel. And we used to call that, what did we call it? FOMO, BOMO, I can't remember. Bottom of the funnel, right? Bofo, somebody made that up and it never stuck. So that's where the podcast sits, I think. And it's highly influential. If you look at trade shows, for example, some trade shows I've gone to, almost every attendee you talk to, they listen to the podcast at some point before they spend the $2,000-$3,000 to go. So it really makes a difference. Then you got video. Video is quite different. And video essentially online is replacing text in many, many cases. I'm a bit old fashioned. I like reading. And I know I'm not the only person out there. I prefer documents. And why? Because I can skim through them. And, you know, I'm academically trained, right? I started my PhD and I switched instead to a certification. Anyway, so I got years and years of academic training. So I like reading. But I still find myself watching videos more and more in lieu of text. So when it comes to things that teach me, I prefer a video, right? If it's cooking, if it's how to cook a recipe, I prefer YouTube than a recipe book. If it's how to operate a device or a new hardware or software, videos can do better, right? And if it comes to something where somebody's giving you advice or testimonial, video is much more credible than text, right? So one of the best videos you can make, which oddly are the last in our priority list to create, are testimonial videos, right? This is one thing I've never quite figured out, and I'm an expert in video. Why does it take us so much effort to create them? Why do we push them to last, right? We're always focusing on the top of the funnel, get more people to come and visit our site. But hey, we can get testimonial videos. It doesn't take that much more work. Let's just make those, and they're so important. Part of it is because you have to get the people to actually talk, and then we're like, oh, we have to talk to people, and you know, that's scary. So we don't want to do that. But you know, that last time when we went to, when I was working at Wave.video, we went to Social Media Marketing World. They said, this is my goal. What I want to do is spend a full day, every single day, just filming testimonials, because we're going to have a lot of customers there. Pretty much we sold to everybody who goes to that conference that can buy. Let's turn this conference into a goal that we just, whenever somebody comes to our booth and says, I'm a customer, let's say, great, pull them over, have them record a testimonial. We walked out with dozens of testimonials, and then it took us several months to edit them, and you know, just sat there. We didn't do it quite enough. So that's my confession, if you will, and that's my brand, CMO Confessions. My confession is that, you know, that's my weak spot, the testimonial videos, just like many of us. Yeah.
That, you know, and you do some interesting things too, like live videos from your kitchen and Q&As. So I love that. And I love the colorful nature of how you look at all of this. And I'm curious, where do you see the most value from doing like live videos from your kitchen and Q&As?
Yeah, I decided to do it from my kitchen because, you know, everybody, when you look online nowadays and social media, you see these two talking heads. It's usually the same two people, you know, two people you've already seen somewhere before online, right? And they're going blah, blah about something that you probably know everything about. So why should you listen to it? Why should you watch it? Right? It's not easy to turn on the volume and just now dedicate yourself to watching that. It doesn't go in the pace you want. It's not exactly what you want, right? So, and it's never in the right timing. It just kind of showed up in the feed, right? So, and there's a lot of it. A year ago, live video was, and video in general was, you know, was not ubiquitous. So you saw a live video, you're like, oh, I got to jump in on this and see what it is. Nowadays, oh, another one, two talking heads. No, enough with that, right? So I wanted to create something that kind of disrupts that, thinks differently. So I thought, okay, let's get out of this home office, which I'm still working on, trying to figure out some, you know, something, some background here that I'm still prototyping some stuff that'll make it a little more visually interesting. Let's get out of here. Let's go someplace a little more inviting. Where do guests usually congregate in the house? In the kitchen. Okay, let's do it there. There's some interesting props there. Maybe I can play around with that. And let's just have it more conversational. Because they realize nowadays, the question is, why here? Why now? Right? When you're putting a video up there, the first thing that pops into somebody's mind when they're about to watch is, why should I watch this right now and right here? So for live video, it's very difficult. If there's a demonstration or a rally or something, okay, obviously it's happening now. I should watch it now, right? It's news, right? Mari Smith, for example, is great at this. She's a master at taking any piece of tutorial information she has and turning it into news. So her videos get a lot of views because she's presenting news, even though it's not really, But she's also great in many other ways, and it all comes together and it's beautiful, right? So I was thinking, okay, what can I do that's different? Not the same to Talking Heads, not in the home office, someplace a little more welcoming, a little more visually interesting, and make it more conversational, right? So another value to live is either it's relevant right now, it's news, or I'm actually having a conversation with my audience. It's still working on it, still figuring it out, and I love the fact that you saw it and that you mentioned it. That means something is picking up there.
Well, it's certainly fun to see people test, especially as a CMO, when you're running marketing for an organization and you're still working and testing and treating your own marketing, your own brand as a sandbox so that you can see what works. Because you can't always use your business as a sandbox in some situations. And so it's neat to see how you've used that live video sandbox nature to see how this would resonate, what you could use it for, and maybe it'll find its way into something in the future in the way that you can combine this with something else. Do you think more people should do live video, and what kind of, you know, things should they know before they start?
You know, it's a great question. I think the video, when it comes to the two questions here, one was, should you do live video? And I think the question, should you do video, is yes, right? In fact, every content you create, I recommend thinking, how do I first make it as a video and then repurpose it to other channels? It's easy to formats. It's easy to take a video and turn it into text. Very difficult to take a text and turn it into video. It's actually exponentially more difficult to create a video from text than to just make a video from scratch, right? So, because all we're doing here is having a conversation. We got a video, right? Some people will watch it. Great. Now we can make a transcript, turn it into text. So we get both. And we can even have somebody summarize and write it. Not that expensive, not that difficult. So we can get an article out of it. We can get several pieces of video from this by chopping them up and repurposing. So there's so many different things you can do with this video. Now, should you make live videos is a different question. I think the answer is one of two situations. You can either provide newsy, right? Something that there's a reason to watch now, or two, you're having a conversation with the audience, with the people. And I hate the word audience because it automatically does not connect to conversation. You can't have a conversation with audience. You can have a conversation with people, right? So have a conversation with your people on the other side, right? Those are the two main reasons. I also go live sometimes, and I do this mostly on LinkedIn, just as a way to sort of as a byproduct of my podcast recording. So I'm thinking, okay, I want to record my podcast. I invite people for podcast recordings, they say yes, but if I invite them to a LinkedIn Live, they say, yes, right? So I invite them to a LinkedIn Live, they say, I'm also recording this on my podcast. They're super, super happy. I get a bit of a video that they can clip and later make as my promotion for the podcast, etc. And so I don't really care how many people are watching it on a LinkedIn in that particular case. It just kind of, it just ties into the whole methodology, if you will, of getting in and promotion and all of that. So the fact that it's live is not what's interesting here at all. But that's another opportunity, if you will, with live video.
Wonderful. Yeah, I concur. It really comes down to two for me when you are really having fun doing it. Because if you're not, and it's going to come out on the other end. They're gonna be able to tell, and so you want whatever you're doing to be, you know, at least feeling like this is enjoyment. And if it's too painful, then you know it might be that it's easier to do on a recorded video versus a live video, and then work your way up to it. But I totally agree with you. I know we need to close this out, and I really appreciate your time here. I'd just love to close out by asking you if you think B2B has an audience and an appetite for all of these channels, because it's B2C absolutely, but what about B2B?
I don't know that B2C has more of an appetite for this. I think there's a difference in the kind of content B2C and B2B want. So B2C are much more into entertainment, right? B2B are more into information and sometimes infotainment or things like that, right? So B2B, the challenge with B2B is, yes, they do want it, but the number of people who are going to watch your video, if you're in a classic B2B or enterprise, is not high, right? So then it becomes a question of, do they actually want to produce a video and overthink it and do all of this stuff just to reach, you know, 100 people, 50 people, I don't know how many, right? In some cases, it's a very small number. So I think you have to think of them, you have to think of video a little, as the opportunity with video differently in B2B. Think of the entire buyer journey or the entire customer journey, right? Or even before they enter your funnel, even before they're buying from you, right? And before they know they even need your solution. What kind of touch points can you create with them and do it through video? So these touch points can be something where you can share something about your industry. You can share maybe industry news, maybe from behind the scenes. If you've got a manufacturing plant, you can use it to show, here's how the, some of the things that we do in the factory itself. So people love that, right? Company culture, great. Here's how, you know, for me, as a SaaS marketer, right? I might be looking to get hired one day. So I wanna show a little bit of how I think and how I work and what I'm, you know, some of the magic I'm doing on a day-to-day basis, even though I might not be looking to get hired today or tomorrow or next year, right? I still want to create those touch points ahead of time. And then one day somebody's gonna say, oh, who is a small person in this field that I wanna hire? Daniel gives great advice. I love the stuff that Daniel's doing. I've been watching his journey over the years. I want to hire him as my CMO, right? So that's the kind of, those kind of videos work very, very well over time, building those relationships with people. Again, focus on relationships, focus on contributing value to them, not necessarily within, not necessarily trying to push your product right now at all, just building that journey over time. And I think you can do very well.
Daniel, this has been fantastic. I really can't thank you enough for joining us here on Leadtail TV. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Oh, cmoconfessions.com is my go-to. It's my home. You can find me there. You can find me on it's Apple Podcasts. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me anywhere you look, Daniel Glickman. But CMO Confessions, you'll find everything from there.
Well, thank you so much. And we're going to be excited seeing how everything unfolds for you.
Very good. Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Hi, everyone. Spencer here on the Leadtail team. I just wanted to thank our guest, Daniel Glickman, for coming on the show today. You can find him at cmoconfessions.com. If you'd like to continue the conversation online, tweet us on Twitter at Leadtail or our guest at cmoconfessions. Thanks.
If you want to see the full video interview series, you can find this episode and more at leadtailtv.com. Please make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Have ideas for the show? Do you know someone who would be great to be a guest? Drop us a line at studios@leadtail.com. Thanks.